Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome to Monday's episode of the Tennis Scottish Football Podcast. I am your host. You've not heard from me in a while. Let me refresh your memory. I'm Craig Fowler. And on this show, I am joined by Craig Anderson.
Hello, how are you doing?
And Tom Watt.
Hello, how are we doing?
I'm good. Guys, how are you, Craig? How are you getting on? Are you over yet the supreme disappointment, frustration, anguish, any other words you want to throw out there of the tennis team at the annual RBS football quiz, finishing second by half a point?
It was certainly quite disappointing. I was saying to you that I had to shoot back through to Glasgow immediately, basically after we answered the last question, and we were 5 points behind going into the last round. So I kind of assumed we didn't have much chance anyway. And then when Tony messaged me when I was in a taxi on the way to Haymarket to say we'd lost by half a point, and I was just like thinking through all the answers that you'd maybe changed at the last minute, and certainly it's hard because we changed some at the last minute that were right. It's like we got them right as a result, so it was that balance. But yeah, I was costing a particular couple of questions, but it was a really good event, and I think quite a bit of money raised. So we'll hopefully go back and we can hopefully win it next year.
Yeah, and hopefully I can attend next year, because I was supposed to be a part of the team, but I had to pull out because I caught COVID last week.
It was inconvenient timing, Craig.
Very 2021 of you.
It was fucking, it was bad as well. Like, I mean, to be fair, it only lasted 24 hours, really. Like, I woke up on, it was weird because it was the exact same as last time, the exact same. I actually knew. Like, I could just feel it in my throat, like a really kind of dry, kind of slightly gunky throat. And then I kind of started to get a cough, and I was like, hang on, I know this. And so when I took the test, I still have some lateral flows. When I took the test, I just assumed it was going to come up positive, and it did. And then so I had to pull out of a view for the terrace. And then I had to pull out of Thursday's quiz. But there was one day, so basically, not long after I'd taken the test, it was kind of almost a placebo thing. I started to feel a bit kind of hot and bothered, like temperature coming on, my muscles starting to hurt. And I was like, oh, God. And then, yeah, once the meeting was finished, it was like 24 hours where I felt hellish, absolutely hellish. And then it just kind of started to clear up. And then by the start of the next day, I was like, weird. Anyway, Tom.
Short COVID instead of long COVID.
Short COVID. Tom, how are you? You've not had COVID, have you?
I have yet to, touch wood, have COVID at any point in the last 4 years or whatever. Maybe I am. Maybe it's like, yeah. Stay away from my blood, every people. You can't have it. So far so good. What have I been doing? I started and finished my golf career last week. It's the worst game in the world, and golfers are pricks. So, the game has its merits, but golfers are absolute dicks, and so I have no wish to play ever again. it was the start and the end over the course of about 48 hours, and not there's any great loss to the world of golf, but I'd just like to place it on the record that golfers are dicks. And Tories. Bad Tories.
Dicks and bad Tories. Yeah.
I'm happy with that. Than Formula One fans.
You're really leaning into the kind of demographics here. You're going to alienate or Tom Watt's views are not the views of the Terry Scottish Football Podcast.
I mean, they are a bit, but
I think they're fairly representative there, Craig.
I'm sure there are golfers who are good people. I know there are golfers who are good people, but in my limited experience, the ones who I have been on a golf course with are not good people.
My auntie and uncle are keen golfers, and they're nice.
Well, there you go. I'm happy to make an exception. I'm happy to make an exception for a number of people I know who I like and I know happen to play golf. But you're not going to have to bother with me on a green or a fairway anytime soon, because the rest of your people like you have put me off. The starters we mean to go on, yeah. Let's alienate some people.
How about this for a really, really tenuous link? Speaking of people, Rangers lost the cup final at the weekend.
Way.
they are the people, but Celtic were the victors in the Viaplay Cup final at Hampden Park. 2-1, both goals coming from Kyogo, with Alfredo Morelos grabbing the other. Guys, I have only seen one of the games we're going to cover this weekend, so I'm pretty much playing the role as host and just about host alone on this show. So you're going to have to guide me. I assume both of you watched the game. Craig,
yep.
What were your thoughts?
The quality, I thought the quality was particularly low for a lot of the game, to be quite honest. There's been some that have been of a higher quality, but Celtic were very much the better team, I thought, right through scoring their two goals. And I thought this could get a bit ugly almost for Rangers, because Rangers didn't turn up at all in the first half, and they were basically only saved by Celtic being Celtic specifically, Dyson Maida being particularly poor on the ball. But after Rangers scored, they had that kind of classic shift of momentum in the game. You started to wonder, but that probably was just a kind of, they blew themselves out quite quickly, and then it was, I would say, reasonably comfortable. If anything, towards the end, it looked more likely Celtic were going to score a third. They should have scored a third. I think Hak Sabanovic had, even in the sort of 5 minutes he was on the pitch, had enough chances to win the game or seal the game more comfortably. But now, Celtic undoubtedly deserved victors, even if the manner in which they got to the final was obviously under a heavy cloud of refereeing conspiracy and corruption. But they were thoroughly deserved winners in the game. And I thought Rangers, like James Tavernier, turning into the kind of king of apologising after a bad performance. I don't think I've ever seen a footballer more in my life have to apologise in post-match interviews more than Tavernier. And he was doing it again, and quite rightly, I thought Rangers were abject. He was particularly poor, but the whole defence played badly. The forwards were the kind of only impressive part of the Rangers team, or the only part that kind of did some stuff right, because they had to change their whole midfield as well. He got that badly wrong with his team selection, I think. It was too much loyalty to the kind of Gerrard era players, almost the ones yeah, from then.
Lundstrom, Kamara, and Tillman all played. So Lundstrom and Tillman, big fitness doubts before the game, and that doesn't seem like it paid off. And again, like I said, I didn't watch the match, but I've heard that Glenn Kamara had a bit of a shocker.
I mean, I think what was surprising for me is there's two things. Like, if you were to identify the area, having watched just a handful of minutes of a Rangers game, you know, they'll be dangerous out wide when Ryan Kent gets the ball, when there's overlaps. And that's largely where they had their danger, in flashes. What you would not have expected, especially from what you would have assumed would have been learned from the Old Firm game at New Year, was especially in the second half of that game, the way that Rangers midfield pushed up and kept the pressure on, kept Celtic kind of fenced in, and kept the pressure on. In this, you know, as Craig said, the midfield especially Celtic ran over the top of them and could play through them. And the amount of time that, like, especially Callum McGregor was getting to pick passes and, you know, eat up ground without being challenged, you know, without there being issue. And then the amount of time that, you know, there was a simple overlap and a simple and they'd break beyond the Rangers midfield seemed like a lesson that hadn't been learned from the game previously when Rangers had been really good and were kind of unlucky not to win, and certainly in the second half did everything right. They didn't turn up. You know, they were lucky to. They got their goal from Morelos got their goal from a set piece. They did have a couple of. There was a Fashion-Sakala had a couple of chances. Had one in particular where he opts to shoot from a really really acute angle rather than just squaring the ball. But you know, in the last 5 minutes on the break, when you think maybe Rangers are going to put a bit more Celtic under a bit more sustained pressure, there were four, like 3-on-4 breaks or 2-on-1, 2v1 breaks, where if anyone had. You know, if you'd ever played FIFA before, you just square it and you win the game, and that's you confidently. So I think what was alarming for me was both the ease in which the Celtic midfield kind of strolled the game, but also the fact that there didn't seem to have been any lessons learned from what looked like quite a positive. And rather than feeling from New Year where, you know, maybe there is, if not the gap is closing, maybe there's a sign that there's some progress being made, and you know Celtic have been phenomenal this season, but maybe there's some progress being made. It did feel a bit like, you know, a sign of how big the gap is between the two sides.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I think Rangers have played most of the games I've seen them very badly since Beal came in, but they've got away with it because probably with the exception of certainly that Celtic game that you mentioned where they were actually very good after going behind, but they've got away with it because they've been playing against kind of opposition who've been either poor or have started to kind of make mistakes, and that Celtic team aren't going to do that, and so it felt like that was kind of a long time coming for that team. But the thing that stood out for me is like when Alan McGregor was probably Rangers' best player on the day, I think that's not what you were expecting. Your 41-year-old goalkeeper to be the one who's kind of turning up, the guy who's probably been out of form recently. And that kind of said it all about the lack of any standout performances. They needed big performances from Tavernier, from Goldson, and the two of them were really bad. And they needed Morelos to do more, I think, in the game, full stop. And they needed Tillman to turn up, and you can say it was fitness, but he's had a bit of a tendency to me to go missing in games, and you didn't see much from him. But then he made all the changes. I think it was immediately after they scored, although they were already lined up. But Cantwell came on, Raskin came on. You didn't see them in the game either. They really did nothing as well. So all round, I just thought it was almost Celtic doing to Rangers what they do to a lot of us, which is just keep your arm's length almost. Like there did seem to be a bit of a gap in quality, and I didn't see that in the January game at all. So that would be a bit of a worry. I would say that Rangers seem to have gone backwards a wee bit.
I mean, especially off the back of some of the noises that were made in the build-up. You know, Fashion-Sakala's comments and some of the comments about the narrowing of the gap and it didn't look that way. You know, I think especially ahead of an old form game where they're, it's a bit of a cliche to say form's got goes out the window because it hasn't. You know, in recent years it really hasn't. But it, you know, strange things can happen in these games. Just, and I think a lot of Celtic bloggers have said it. You know, doing your talking on the pitch, and I think that's exactly what they did. I think it will be interesting to see what happens with Beal when there's pressure, because I think as you said, Craig, they've got some good results. They've been good in spells. It's, you know, you can't criticize him too much because he's pretty much won every game.
He's won basically every game. Yeah.
but they have had to pull it out the bag a little bit, and even in very comfortable, you even in a honeymoon period, he's still bitten at Chris Sutton for no reason. You know, Chris Sutton's a fucking professional opinion giver. Just like, forget about it. You're the one that gets sucked into his orbit rather than the other way around. Said slightly odd things about the Livingston, the banner that was at Livingston, and taking that personally, and now is under pressure because he made significant mistakes tactically, made significant mistakes in his starting 11. And you can say, if you're bringing off your entire midfield after an hour, you know, well done, that's brave for doing it. But you can also maybe suggest that it was a mistake to start them in the first place.
And was one of those mistakes taking Alfredo Morelos off with 15 minutes left, having, Craig said he should have done more in the game, but he scored the goal that brought him back into it. And I mean, I know Morelos hasn't played well this season, hasn't really played well for a couple of seasons now, but Antonio Colak is not a player in form, and going to be the guy who's going to fire you back in a cup final.
He was fucking rubbish when he came on, Colak. He was, everything bounced off him. Like, no, I would never take a player who scored off unless they're injured, or, you know, not when it's someone like Morelos who doesn't let bad form affect him. Like, he can be playing badly and he still pops up. That did seem weird to me. I didn't really expect him to go off. There were other guys that you could have removed and had the two of them on the pitch. It felt a bit like he was kind of doing it by numbers. Like, it felt like he'd almost decided what his subs were going to be, and he was going to make them no matter what happened. And I think that's always a worry. It's like, kind of back to Warburton's, no plan B, just do plan A better. And it felt like it was just like, this is what I'm going to do. They were getting, what I said, apart from that wee spell where they obviously got the momentum for the goal and the fans were up and all the rest of it. And I think they had a free kick that was probably you kind of thought they got a free kick kind of 25 yards from goal, and you thought maybe Tavernier's going to step up and do something here in a couple of kind of scrappy half bits and pieces. But Celtic, despite Joe Hart looking constantly like they was on the verge of a howler, he never actually made one. And
he always looks on the verge of that.
I've never seen a player do it so much. But yeah, I thought Beale, I've not been impressed with Beale since he came in, to be honest. And it's easy to say after they get beat, but I think I've been saying it after they won as well. I think he won't be long for the job, to be honest. I think he's too small a man for the job. Just in case we move on, Nick Walsh, I thought, had a really good game as a referee. Hmm. I think you couldn't really point to any controversy in the game, despite it threatening to boil over a couple of times. So fair play to him. Not someone I usually like, but he's a good referee, I think.
We've done the kind of natural thing and drifted towards the negative a little bit by talking about Rangers who lost the game, but is there anything else to be said about Celtic that hasn't been said already?
They are really, really good. I think it's hard. The argument is where the Celtic team ranks in the other teams Celtic have had in the last decade. You know, is this the best team that they've had in the last decade? You could say that Europe will be the benchmark for that, but you know, Brendan Rodgers' teams in Europe weren't particularly clever. I think they look like a more complete unit. They look like they've got more in depth on the bench, and they're arguably facing more of a, there are more pretty decent sides in the league than there probably were 6 or 7 years ago, who, you know, might challenge them at different points. I think, but it's really hard to say. Like, it's hard to say anything more about them because they play really good football. They are on the front foot. They should have won by, I mean, if they'd won 4-1, you would not have, there would have been no problem with that at all because they had two gilt-edged chances at the end, three like really good ones, but two in particular where put your boot through it or square it or even sclaff it, it'll fall at the feet of another Celtic player and they'll get it happen. But, you know, they were pulled wide or hit straight at Al McGregor, who did admittedly have a really good game. All, you know, credit where it's due to Postecoglou because they were in a right mess when he took over, and almost every signing he's made has been positive. I think there's maybe been a couple of missteps and they're not really, no one focuses on them because the vast majority of the business has been really, really good. But I don't think there's an awful lot you can say that hasn't already been said. They're the best team in the league. They're the best team in the country by quite a way and probably by even more of a distance than I thought on Friday.
I think they didn't even play to their best, I would have said, that would be the thing you would say about Celtic there, because Greg Taylor had a particularly poor game, Maida as well, and Jota wasn't really in the game, and so they're kind of quite important players, certainly the two wide guys, and if they're not even performing to their best, Kyogo obviously scores two tap-ins. I thought the going over the top of how good a player he was on the basis of that game, I found odd, but yeah, I've seen him play much better, but he did score twice, but that would be a worry. Yeah, it's hard to see teams being able to beat them very often, and that's always a concerning situation when you kind of just expect them to, you know, even when they go to Tynecastle or when they go to these places where sometimes Celtic would slip up, you're just like, no, they're going to win here. And yeah, I think that probably is the biggest credit you can give to them, grudgingly.
There's not really a feeling right now that anywhere Dundee United go that they're going to win. And that certainly wasn't the case on Saturday, as they were beaten 4-0 by Ross County in the Highlands.
Oh, boy.
Which meant the end of Liam Fox as Dundee United manager to, I mean, a little surprise, I would say, even though Mark Ogren said last week that there was no immediate plans to change the boss after that result, after that performance, which I've seen Dundee United fans saying it was actually worse than the 9-0 against Celtic. Then it really was inevitable, I guess, in the end. Tom, you watched this one. How bad were United?
So I've seen a couple. I've seen a number of absolute disgraceful performances this season. A couple, at least four or five, I think, from my own side. And this was every bit as bad as anything. Like, first, you know, credit where it's due. Ross County were good. They did what they had to do. Jordan White and Eamon Brophy look like they're going to be a very, very competent forward pairing. But Dundee United were horrendous. Like, their positioning, like the opening goal, I haven't seen anything like that ever happen before.
No.
Where three players are going for the same ball, any one of them decides to take any ownership of it, but nobody does, and it's, you know, it's a tight angle, but it's an empty net. But that was what happened right throughout the game. Dundee United had more played more passes. They had more touches of the ball than Ross County. This is not a bad squad. Like, it's not a great squad, but there are six players in that squad that you'd think they would get into most sides in the rest of the league. Most people would. So it's not about that. It's about guys like Charlie Mulgrew just chucking it. And like, I'm singling him out, and it's probably not fair to single him out because the entire team were terrible.
I think it seems quite fair to single him out.
Well, like, I think it's a little bit like you could put a whole squad in the bag, and if you hit the bag, whoever got it would deserve it. That old thing about I can't remember who it was. They said
Franz Beckenbauer.
Beckenbauer said it. Yeah. Well, it's the same sort of thing. But if you got Charlie Mulgrew, he really did deserve it. Like, so arguably three of the goals were his responsibility. He's And I don't believe he's done. That's the thing. I don't think he's... I think he can still stroll through games if he wants to. He's just down tools. And couldn't hear Eamon Brophy putting pressure on him and was dithering on the ball. Like, he had more touches than anybody else in the Dundee United team. He played more passes than anyone else on the Dundee United team. And bearing in mind he's playing as a centre-back, 55% pass completion. Now, you'd immediately think it's because he's putting in crosses or he's playing lots of long balls. He didn't put a single cross in all game. But there were a couple of long balls, sure, but it was like just simple passes and there was no urgency about it at all when it went wrong. It was a farce. It was an absolute farce. And I don't think it's the manager's fault. I think he's the easiest of many problems to fix, but it's seeping down from the top. It's seeping from the top down. There is a huge problem at Dundee United. There's no way that that squad should be where it is. And at the moment, it's going down. Like, somebody else may come in and be able to fix it, but I don't think the fundamental problems that have got them there will be fixed regardless of who comes in. Because that, you know, there's bad performances. Loads of teams have put in bad performances this season. Loads of teams have not got the players to put in a particularly good performance, and sometimes you just get absolutely outclassed. But Ross County are, you know, they are better than they have been at the start of the season, but they're not a great side by any stretch. And what they were playing, like overlaps, they were like, there was nutmegs going on, there was like, you know, FIFA Street skills going on, just absolutely rinsing out the Dundee United, the entire 11, just taking the piss out of them. And they were really lucky it was only four. It was an absolute farce, and, you know, no surprise that Fox got fired, but doesn't fix the problems.
I think that's what you say. It's a kind of weak manager in a strong dressing room is always going to be a bit of a problem, and Fox doesn't have the personality. I don't think he has the ability either, but he doesn't have the personality certainly to deal with that dressing room. And that, I mean, you are a Premiership club appointing a guy who failed at Cowdenbeath. Like, do you know what I mean? That in itself should be in. You guys can get it wrong and can, you know, turn it round, and it doesn't make you a bad coach and all the rest of it. But you're Dundee United, you're one of the biggest clubs in the country. Why the fuck were you appointing Liam Fox in the first place? And like, just it just didn't make sense. And of course, that dressing room is going to be, it's a strong dressing room. And regardless of, I think it's sometimes very easy for people to start putting the blame on senior players. Certainly it is when they play badly. Part of our job of a manager is to control these strong personalities, and there's been plenty of strong dressing rooms before that the manager has been able to hold them together. And I mean, Tam Courts seemed to basically manage it last season, it was last season. Feels like several managers ago, so I was trying to get the timeline right. But and Tam Courts is not exactly a guy that would strike you as being like a strong football man type manager. So a lot does come on to Fox, but that performance, man, it was diabolical. And yeah, we can talk about Ross County. I mean, the acquisition of Brophy, it's a player who I've always liked. And I was just saying, watching those highlights back, I don't believe that he would have been unattainable for Killie, and he would have been exactly the player we need. And I don't know what the situation was there, but I would have imagined he would rather have come back to us than had to go to Dingwall, all the rest of it. So it's when you look at things like that, they have recruited extremely well. They've got Danda seems to finally be kind of becoming the player that I think he always promised to be, because he came in with a very high expectations, I think, and I hadn't really seen much from him, but he looked like he had a really good game. And yeah, that front pairing, you've focused on the first goal, but I think the fourth goal is the worst in terms of it just being like such a simple ball. And Brophy just is basically unchallenged to step out from that kind of inside right position, just right onto it. And I mean, it's a fantastic finish, but everything about that just screamed out like terrible defending and a lack of urgency from a team that are already 3-0 down. There's very little positive to say about United, but I do want to say County, that's, they are a team who, when they sniff weakness, to take advantage of it. They did that against Killie. They won 3-0 against us. That's their only two wins in the last kind of, I don't know if it's even this year, they beat us. They beat us 3-0 at Dingwall, and they beat United 4-0. So when they sense a team are there to there for the taking, they go and take them. But yeah, as you pointed out, it also suggests they're not actually very good, and so that should be even more of a worry for United.
I think the most damning thing I could say about United at the moment is if they chose to not have a manager. The most damning thing about that dressing room at the moment is if they chose to go for the rest of the season without a manager, I would be more confident that they'd pick up more points than if they install someone that the current, you know, the current football advisory board, to borrow a term, might suggest, because it's you know, the lunatics running the asylum, really. There are a lot of good players there. They should be absolutely fine. They should be capable of putting together some wins. They, you know, if they finish in the bottom six, which you'd imagine that's going to happen, they should still, you would still fancy them against most teams with the squad that they've got. But nobody's bothering their arse, and they're about to, you know, you'd imagine that they were linked with the American goalkeeper, his name's Pat, but you know, they were looking at their fourth goalkeeper of the season. That's not the sign of a particularly, and we're not talking like, you know, there's been injuries or, you know, there's been a problem anyway. Their first choice goalkeeper of the season, potentially, that's not the sign of a robust transfer strategy.
Certainly not. Just about, I'd say one little more thing about County before we move on, because Marky McKay did actually change the system for this game. You wouldn't have realised it if you only saw the graphic from the weekly highlights show that appears on the BBC. They had it down as a 3-5-2. It wasn't. It was a 4-4-2 with Danda playing off the left, giving a kind of free roll to drift wherever he wanted. And it does seem like, regardless of whether he's... Because in this game, Malky McKay, I think, changed it up because United were going with a 4-3-3. So it's always a bit iffy when you're matching up a back three with a team playing with a front three. Even a team as poor as United, defenders can get dragged out of positions and can open up gaps. And it's never a particularly great matchup, I don't think. So he changed it to the four. But regardless of what system they're playing, they do seem to have kind of found something with Brophy playing alongside White. Yep. They're both looking, because not only is Brophy playing well, but John White's playing really well at the moment as well, with somebody else alongside them who's a goal threat. But it's the midfield behind them. Danda, I think Joel said this in our meeting for a view for the terrace, that he's the most creative player in the bottom six. That's probably true. He obviously has some deficiencies to his game, but when you have Noah Kenna and you have Victor Latorre behind them, basically there to win the ball, and that's it, and provide that platform, then it is starting to seem like quite a nice balance to this Ross County side. And I feel like we've done this all season, where we've got carried away with teams, you know, getting a couple of results and going, oh yeah, I think they'll be fine. But County are starting to look like, with those adjustments in January, that they look the best bet of the teams at the bottom of the table to be safe, I would say. Right, let's move on. Who wants to go first? Because we've got both your teams in action.
On you go, Craig.
two teams that were struggling at the bottom of the table as well. And
sorry, we should say Kilmarnock against Motherwell. That was the game. Yes, finished one each. Callum Slattery cancelling out a first half goal from Killie with a ridiculous free kick in the last minute. Sorry, Craig, go on.
Yeah, no. It was a really disappointing afternoon, I would say, because Killie, for me, I wouldn't even say deserved to win. Killie played well in this game. Killie played well for the first hour of the game, certainly. And I have never in my life seen a team with such a vast gulf in quality for home performances compared to away performances, because I was at Easter Road last week, you know, you heard me on here. And we were abject, absolutely terrible. And then they come out against Motherwell, albeit Motherwell are obviously a worse team than Hibs, but nonetheless, they came out and took control of the game on the front foot for the first hour of that game. Motherwell had a couple of wee breaks, but Killie took control of that game, and you thought, right, we're doing this again. But I can understand sometimes a team being a wee bit worse at home, away or at home, or, you know, the fans behind them and all the rest of it, but it genuinely looks like they have so much belief when they're playing at Rugby Park. We've only lost three times at home, and two of them have been against Rangers and Celtic, and narrowly against Rangers as well. And then you go to away from home and you just can't buy a win, and it just doesn't make any sense to me. But Kelly changed it back up, put Alan Power back in the middle of the park. Alan Power in the first half didn't actually play that well, but I think just having someone with, even though he's a 35-year-old or whatever age he is, he's the one that's got legs out of all our midfielders that can get about the park. And that worked nicely. McKenzie obviously kind of tucking in from the side, and then you've got Polworth who doesn't work the hardest, but he's a ball player and he had another good game, as you would expect him to against Motherwell. But that balance worked more nicely, and Armstrong and indeed Joe Wright was playing fullback, so he swapped it round. He had Mayo playing centre-back and Wright playing right-back, or kind of half and half between right-back and right-centre-back, as it's been quite a lot. But they were basically just pushing right high up the park to win balls in the air, and it was a really successful tactic. James Furlong for Motherwell had an absolute stinker of a performance. Was getting beat in the air a lot, but also constantly letting people in behind him. But just the amount of chances in the first 15 minutes, even before we scored, where we were flashing balls across the box from that area, and it was just the wrong choice or the wrong ball, and that's been a constant theme all season. Finally get the goal, which was obviously a shambles from Motherwell's point of view. First, Kelly doesn't hold a ball straight at him, and then Van Veen's dithering inside his own six-yard box and eventually clears it against someone. And Robinson, the absolute player you would want on there, the player who is the most likely to score weird goals, Scott Robinson, did it again. A guy who, if Scott Robinson can stay fit and fit enough to start every game between now and the end of the season, I'll be a lot more confident, because he's such a difference maker. He's just an absolute pest to opposing teams. And when he came on against Hibs, he was much better. He made a difference in the same again with this game when he started it. But then Kelly just couldn't. We had some half chances, but we couldn't quite seize the advantage, because Deutsch had a header that was kind of, he should have done a wee bit better with, but it was straight at Kelly. Kelly saved it well. And then the big moment, I would say, was Deutsch got played through on goal. It was a lovely move, because Kelly were knocking the ball about really nicely, I thought, like in spells. It was long ball to start the moves, and then once it came down, they were knocking it about. And I think that's a kind of theme with McInnes. The first ball from the goalkeeper is safe to get up the park, and then once you've got a bit of control of the ball, that's when you see a bit more about it. But Robinson, I think, was played a lovely reverse ball, and Deutsch got put through, and it was maybe about 35 yards from goal. And he managed to get himself, do everything right, make the run, time the run well, get goal side of his opponent. But then he was like so slow that all he was able to do really was try and cut across the defender and basically either prevent the defender from challenging him, or probably even preferably get the defender to challenge him and get the red card. But neither happened. And that was probably the turning point, in the sense that Motherwell, I think, woke up at that point. Kettlewell made three changes, I think, a triple sub. I think it was two. They certainly made three changes. I can't remember if they were at the same time. They improved, and Kelly just didn't have the options on the bench to really change things, even though it was kind of much needed. But I still thought we were going to see the game out. Sam Walker had made a few safeties, really coming on a game at the moment, Walker. And none of the saves up until the very last one were saves that I wouldn't expect him to make. But Motherwell were obviously piling on the pressure and definitely improved at that point. And then obviously they get that free kick, and it's a fantastic goal. There's no doubt about that. And Motherwell will say, because of the chances they had, that they probably could say they deserved a point. But I just thought from the point of view of how much control Kelly had in the game in that first hour, it was a blow not to convert that. And I think that would have made such a big difference, because then we're 6 points ahead of United, we're still ahead of County, and Motherwell are right back in. It was a pretty disappointing one from that point of view.
Tom, do you have anything to add on this? Or about Kelly or Motherwell in general? Motherwell, that's now three games undefeated under Stuart Kettlewell. This was his first match in charge on a permanent basis. He did think for, just about 90 minutes, thought, you maybe made an error here, maybe jumped the gun a little bit. But Callum Slattery did manage to haul it back. But it's not, to be fair, Craig does make the point that Killie are a completely different side at home. But Motherwell, they played the same team that played against Hearts, and it wasn't the same type of performance.
I mean, I think, unfortunately, and this is quite a sad state of affairs, but there is almost a case to be made for strategically firing your manager at the right point for the new manager bounce that you get immediately. You know, with certain squads, where the issue is just they need a kick up the arse, then I don't by any stretch think Motherwell are safe yet. I think they got a new manager bounce. They probably picked up a bit of the luck they were due in some of the previous 13 or whatever beforehand that Hamill wasn't getting anything from. But I think it's a sign of like how far they've to go just yet that they're pretty pleased with pleased with the results. Fair enough, you know, 8 points from 7 points from the last possible 9. Moving away from the bottom, and it does, and a cushion at this point in the season when it doesn't look like too many of the sides at the bottom are going to be able to put together any kind of run. But yeah, no, early days for Kettlewell. I don't think he's got an awful lot to play with in terms of personnel to change systems or do anything drastically different, but he does seem to already have people doing their jobs and battling for things and just getting a little bit more from what he's got.
And I think that's the thing for Killie, because we talked about Dundee United chucking, you know, the players down in tools, and you talked about Motherwell needing a reaction. I don't think any of that applies to Killie. I think the players are trying their very best, and I think it's just a real lack of quality that you're seeing that's been the problem as much as anything. And it's kind of typified by Doidge, because I thought Doidge for the first 45 minutes an hour of that game was by far the best I've seen him play in terms of he wins literally everything in the air, and he's an intelligent forward. It's just that he can't score anymore and his body can't keep up. And it's so frustrating, because you can understand what a good partnership Doidge and Robinson could really be, but both of them are just lacking that wee bit of pace. And it's all of that. Killie have got a lot of three-quarter players, I think, and it's, we just need all of those three quarters to round up to a one in enough games, I think, is basically what I'm looking for. But if they don't, then there's bother.
Right, let's go from there up to the northeast, where Aberdeen recorded a 1-0 victory over Livingston, with Bojan Majovski grabbing the only goal of the game. Tom, your side are, you know, not great, but they are functioning as a football team once again under Barry Robson. So that's got to be pleasing, at least.
Yeah, I think the most pleasing thing about it was controlled, and it's been a long time since, I mean, I can't even pick out the last time there was a controlled performance. There's been good performances. They blew Livy away last time, 5-0 at Pittodrie, but that was like score, and then they come forward and score again. And, you know, there was no like game management in it, whereas this was disciplined. There was a lot more defensive cohesion than there's been at any point this season. There was a lot more from Shinny and Ramadani in both covering their defence and starting attacks. There was a lot more. It's the first time in a while I think I've thought, you know what, Ross McCrory's future might actually be at right back. If he could just practice either shooting or squaring the ball, one or other, then, you know, he would have scored or set up a goal. I think he had more shots on goal than anyone else in the on the park. It was a bit more controlled. It was a bit more disciplined. It took a mistake of sorts for the goal for Majovski to get the goal, but, you know, still a very tight angle, really, really good finish. And there were signs of, you know, Duke started doing Duke things and showing off. And Ryan Duncan was really good. And I think there's been a lot of expectation, or hope and expectation, that he will start to be in and around the first team a little bit more. interesting that Barry Robson switched from his kind of, it looked like he had a favoured back three, the sort of 3-5-2 with the wing backs. He started that in every match that he'd taken charge of, but went to the 4-3-3. It was a lot more fluid. You did get a lot more out of the forward players in particular, and McCrory. Interesting to see what he does when Liam Scales comes back at the weekend, and see if he goes in at left back or if he goes back to the back three. I think back in the top six, Robson was told to steady the ship. He steadied the ship. It's not, you know, the season's not completely unsalvageable from whatever that means. Given nobody else between, well, given not many other, nobody else other than Rangers and Celtic at the moment seem to be particularly consistent, there's at least the hope that there's a chance to put some results together and challenge for the European spots. But I think that's off the back of that, the hope for that and the kind of realistic hope from that is defensively much, much, much better. But overall, I think the main thing is Barry Robson is now the height to clear for whoever the next manager is. Like he's done a very pretty good job. He talks well. The players have said that his training's good, and they've all kind of bought into the way he's doing things.
You always get that though. Anytime there's a change of manager, which change? Oh, the training's really good.
But it genuinely does seem to be though.
Results have picked up and training's shite.
I mean, like, I can well imagine he's fucking terrifying, and I wouldn't want to cross him on the training pitch. But like, genuinely, it does look like the defence knows what they're doing. The midfield knows what they need to do when the ball's, you know, when there's transitions and things. They know roughly what positions they should be taking up at different times. People say it's the basics, but it's the reason that you win or lose football games. And we've had a number of, don't need to look too far, not just Aberdeen, but any club in the division, to see that there's plenty of people that can't get their teams to do that at the moment. So, I mean, whether or not it puts his hat properly in the ring for the job full time, I don't know. He was almost certainly going to get this weekend as well. If he can fix the away form, then phenomenal, give him it. But easier said than done.
Yeah, you've also not scored at Tannadice in 4 attempts.
Well, what better time to fix it?
Livingston must be a wee bit worried at the moment. Like, their form's dropped off a cliff. Obviously,
speaking of the struggle to score goals,
the cup one was a big blow for them, because I think the cup had kind of opened up for them a wee bit, and they were a team who looked capable there, and obviously completely capitulated at home to Inverness. And then, the league form is to the point where they looked pretty bang certain to be in the top six, and now
they looked like they were chance for Europe. I mean, they looked like a pretty good bet for fourth the way they were going.
Up until last weekend, I still thought they would have finished fourth. But yeah. not now.
Yeah, they're starting to fall away. And I think it would be daft to react too quickly to that. I don't think they need to, they are a squad of players who are put together on a fairly limited budget, and sometimes they just run out of ideas a wee bit, and they just need to be able to play their way through it. And it's not like they're going to get relegated, and they probably will still finish in the top six, but they obviously have to try and stop the slide, because there's only six games left until the split, I think. So they really want to make sure that they, win three of those and make sure they get in there, because they obviously missed out in quite disappointing circumstances last season.
It's interesting, there was a wee bit of criticism of Martindale's team selection for this one. He went with quite an attacking lineup. I know that Aberdeen aren't in great shakes this season, and especially in 2023, but it was quite bold and it certainly didn't work. What I read about it in particular, Joel Newbley was on the left of the front three, as he has been quite often at points for Livy throughout his Livingston career, but he ended up having to basically run back more than you would want Joel Newbley to do, because Ross McCrory is always happy to bomb forward. And it just meant there was, they just struggled to give themselves a platform to play in the match. They improved in the second half. He made the change at half time. He changed the system. He brought on Morgan Boyles for Stephen Bradley and went to a three at the back and put Newbley up front. And they did get a bit more joy in the second period without really doing too much. But there was other things as well, like starting Sean Kelly. Sean Kelly's been playing quite a lot in centre midfield over Jason Holt, but this was more of a game for Jason Holt. And it was just interesting to read that Martindale kind of got this one quite fairly wrong for the start. And also it didn't help as well that Nicky Devlin, who Stephen Bradley's a winger who only ever charges inside. He doesn't go outside. He always looks to go inside. So with him going inside, you need Nicky Devlin to go in the overlap and to offer that out ball to keep that width as well. But Devlin was up against Duke, so he was just pinned back for a load of the game as well. So yeah, Livingston's tactics did not work in this one. Somebody whose tactics did work, and he's been certainly many times this season, has been criticised for his tactics, is St Johnston boss Callum Davidson, who I was very impressed that after Dan Phillips was sent off, I think we can agree, for a deserved red card. I think it was a little unlucky, but he was, you know, he was careless, and he certainly was putting his opponent's safety in danger, and it was a bit of a excessive force. So yeah, I think the red card was deserved there. But Davidson, instead, what I would have assumed he would do, which is, you know, just put one up front and have them isolated a lot by themselves, because, well, he's done that quite often as St Johnston manager when he's got 11 men on the park. Instead, he kept two forwards on, and I think St Johnston benefited for that, not only in just in terms of their play, but then he made the double change, taking both forwards off, put two forwards on, and Theo Bear and Zach Rudden, who came on for Nicky Clark and Stevie May, and Zach Rudden got the goal. Although Rudden was a bit, he then blotted his copybook, so he did very well. He won the free kick in the build-up to the goal, scored the goal with an excellent header, but he was the one marking or failing to mark Alex Gogic for the St Mirren equaliser. So the duality of man there from Zach Rudden.
He's also the centre forward, I think. You don't bring him on to mark people. So, I think I agree with you on the red card. It was unfortunate. He didn't mean it, but then you watch that video and it's kind of stomach turning when you see, you know, you imagine what could have happened to Flynn's leg. But
it's never a red card if you were born in the 70s. Anyone older than me would think, nah, get on with it. But it's clearly a red card because, you know, it could be, it was nasty, but not intentionally nasty, but nasty nonetheless.
The thing for me with Rudden is he's the perfect striker to have when you're down to 10 men, because he is a runner and he, like, is just an absolutely... Curtis Main would have been the same at the other end, and he did that against Kilmarnock when they went down to 10, but... You just have these guys who will just never give you a minute's peace, and it was a very weird goal, I would have to say. It wasn't. I knew he scored, and I saw that ball coming off his head, and I thought, that doesn't look like it's going to go in. And even when it hit the kind of frame of the goal, I'm like, this isn't the goal then. And then it was. But yeah, they'll be really disappointed, because that, I mean, we said last week they were safe, but that would have triple walk them as safe if they just won that game, and then they might even have had a wee sniff of being able to catch. We talked about Livingston coming backwards, but it probably puts them in that position of not having much to play for the rest of the season.
I was impressed by St Johnston, less impressed by St Mirren, but they are so bad away from home. Like, the only victory they've had away from home in like the last 3 or 4 months is away to Aberdeen, and, you know, barely counts.
Well, our home record's good, but Graham Shinney was no. We're down at 10 men after 9 minutes, so there's a caveat in that one.
So yeah, it's weird. It's weird that their away form is so bad, because the way that they set up, like, they don't want the ball. They don't want the ball. They like to get runners up to support a counter attack. They go direct. It's kind of like, that's like away from home football. And they do it very well. But they don't do very well at home, but they do well at home. It's strange. It's really strange.
But it's getting into the... Tis the season for St Mirren to find a way of failing to make the top six when all the cards lay, you know, all the cards have fallen in a way that it should be easy, but they somehow managed to, what's the opposite of the Great Escape? Like burrowing your way into the prison. That's what St. Mirren said to do.
I was impressed by Thierry Small on the left of the St. Mirren.
Two names that shouldn't go together.
No,
can we just say that?
3-5-2. He was very direct, getting forwards, like trying to make stuff happen. Thought Curtis Main played all right as well. There was just, yeah, St. Mirren as well. Like, I mean, I know that the red card was right before half time, but also, like, this, it took them about 10 minutes or so at the start of the second half to kind of wake up to the fact that they had a man advantage and to really start to dominate St. Johnstone. They eventually did do that. Then, as I said, Davidson does well, makes the double change, Brodden wins a free kick and then gets the goal. And St. Mirren eventually get their point. But yeah, not a lot to be impressed by St. Mirren in this one. St. Johnstone more so. I thought Stevie May, before he tired in the second half, I thought he was very good in the first half, popping up everywhere, just getting involved constantly. Same with Melko Hallberg, who I was quite impressed with in this one. His, yeah, again, just tendency to find the areas in the attacking third where he's useful as an extra body to link play, to create overloads, to just be there to pick up second balls. So both of them played, yeah, pretty well for St. Johnstone, who I think looked, I mean, they weren't blowing St. Mirren away or anything. They weren't, I wouldn't say completely dominating, but they were definitely the better side before the red card. Adam Montgomery as well, I think, had a decent match getting up and down the flank again before the red card, because then afterwards he was pretty much just reverted to having to only defend. But there was a lot of positives for St. Johnstone, who, after, it's funny how things change, because now I look at that St. Johnstone team and I'm going, not bad. Whereas early in the season I was saying, how the hell are they winning games? This team is absolutely shocking. But Davidson's managed to make a lot of these guys in like decent form. Amazing. I mean, I know in terms of his goal record, it's still not that great, but May plays well pretty much every game now. Nicky Clark's been one of the signings of the season. Dan Phillips has really emerged as I know he got sent off in this one, but he's really emerged as an important player for St. Johnstone, and they've also seen we've got a really good blend with him and Cammy McPherson, who, again, somebody like early in the campaign, you're thinking, right, because I really believed in McPherson. I thought McPherson was a decent player when he was at St. Mirren, but it kind of, there's only so much you can look at somebody and go, well, you've got quite a lot of things I like him in a fielder, but you've never seen me actually play well. And he was kind of one of those ones. So I was starting to think, oh, maybe he's like, you know, maybe he's just a championship player, but he's been in good form. Liam Gordon's starting to look back to the Liam Gordon that he was in the, not last season, but the season before. So there is a lot now about this St. Johnstone side. We are kind of looking at it and going, yeah, not as bad as I thought earlier in the campaign. So well done. Well done. You're not as shit as I thought, St. Johnstone.
Glowing praise.
Pat exactly yourself on the back.
Is that what I was looking for at the start of the season, I suspect?
Right, guys, I think that'll do us. Thank you very much, Tom.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much, Craig.
Thanks very much.
And thank you to everybody for listening. We are now going to record a Patreon where we're going to look at the leading contenders for the vacant Dundee United job with Craig Levein, the headliner in that pack. Join us in that. That's Patreon, patreon.com/terracepodcast. That'll be in the £2 per month tier. And I think that'll do us. So until next time, goodbye. And I hope you enjoy your football. Sports Social Podcast Network.